Welcome back, guys, to the Swartz NFL podcast. We are back after a two-week hiatus. We didn't do it last week because, one, sitting here in the outskirts, the Boston suburbs, there was no power. A pedestrian storm wiped out the power for 4 to 5 days. I was living in caveman time. I had 4G. Even without the Wi-Fi, it was 4G network, not LTE. And I found out a half hour late about the Jimmy Garoppolo trade, which is bizarre because I'm here with Dylan. Dylan, how's it going, man?
All right.
I hit you up about the Garoppolo trade about a half an hour late, and you had even not found out about it at that time with power. How does that happen?
I don't know. I think I was doing some homework or something, and he texted me about, you just said Brady, insane. And I was thinking, Brady had been dealing the last couple of weeks. There's reports of a shoulder injury. I'm like, oh my God, don't tell me Brady is hurt for the rest of the season. I grabbed my phone, really went to Twitter, found out Garoppolo had been traded, and immediately my hopes were back up for the Patriots Super Bowl in basically the next 5 years. But interesting trade. You know, like I think Garoppolo was going to be a very good NFL starter. He's proven that. Win his couple games with the Patriots. We go on the road in a hostile environment. Right. And I think we got a decent return for him. You know, obviously we drafted him high second round. And we get, you know, an early second round de facto first round pick more than likely from the 49ers. So it's something that was going to inevitably happen. So
definitely. And I think just really quickly on the Garoppolo news, just because it is a week and a half old because of this power situation, we couldn't go over it in detail. But really quick, when the draft was happening, we didn't know what was going on in terms of, you know, there was rumors that the Patriots could get one or maybe two of the Browns' 3 first-round picks. Now, it was not going to be first overall. Could have been the 12th overall. Could have been just the 23rd or 26th overall, whatever pick they had in the 20s. And then reports came out recently, right with the trade from Ian Rappaport and Schefter, that there was no chance the Pats were going to get those picks and the Browns never offered them. Obviously, they were interested in Garoppolo. So if you add that in, and if that's true, we don't know what's true. Even if they were going to get the late 20s or whatever it was, 20s first-round pick from the Browns in the 20s, I think it's okay because what they did was they waited 8 games to see if Brady had any type of a drop-off, which he didn't. So they were reassured with Brady, so they didn't have to be screwed if, you know, with trading Garoppolo before the season, thinking that, oh, no, Brady's done, which he's not, and then you don't have Garoppolo. Now they're pretty sure of Brady playing for 3 to 5 years. Or 2 to 3 or whatever it is. So they ship Garoppolo for a pick that's 10 to 12 picks below that. Because like you said, it's going to at least be a top 3, probably the first pick of the second round. So you think it's a good trade?
I do. Again, it was probably inevitable. And as a Patriots fan who is, you know, basically grown up, you know, my entire childhood now, mm-hmm. coming into more adult years, growing up with Brady as quarterback, you obviously have a very emotional attachment to Brady and his time here in New England. So when that trade basically says that Brady, even at 40 years old, is the quarterback for our future, for the next, you know, however many years he plays, he wants to play at least 5 more. So I'm obviously delighted about that, and I hope Garoppolo does, you know, as best as possible without beating us any time.
Right, that's true. And we don't even, I mean, there was rumors about, not rumors, but I saw this Adam Schefter, I think, tweet about the possibility of San Francisco even signing him with the franchise tag and trading him like we thought the Pats were going to do, which they ended up not doing. I don't know if that happens, but either way, we'll see what's going on. I think it's a wise move. They don't play him right away behind what is a corpse of an offensive line. So his career is not over there within 2 games with barely knowing the playbook. But anyways, to the next topic. Not a great slate of games. I feel like it's the 5th or 6th time I've said that. It's what happens in today's NFL. It's parity, but not the good parity. Of course, the NFC is great with parity with their top teams. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But Chiefs-Cowboys. Tough game for Kansas City. I picked Dallas. Dallas won. 3rd loss in 4 games for the Chiefs, who at one point looked like how the Eagles look now, I would say. Like that they were going to run away with things. And for that to happen, and for them to drop to 6-3, they're now a half game behind the Patriots and Steelers. So are the Chiefs in trouble to you?
You know, it's hard to overreact in this league, especially for a fan. You know, you see your team not perform well 1 week, you think all of the progress that they won a couple games before is undone. But if you're a Chiefs fan, don't panic. The Chiefs are still a very good football team. You look, they lost to what some people consider are the best team in the AFC in Pittsburgh, and they go on the road to division rival and only lose in the last play of the game for like 3 defensive penalties. And then obviously Dallas is a very hard place to play. and they're still a good team, Zeke or no Zeke. Dallas is still a good team. I think Dallas will win that game as well. So it's not like the wheels have fallen off here. The Chiefs will stay disciplined. Alex Smith's still playing well. They have weapons on offense. The thing that needs to improve, though, is their secondary play. They are getting absolutely roasted through the air, and the defense really has not been, you know, what we would expect from a Kansas City defense the past couple of years. They've really built the reputation and this rise to being one of the AFC's top teams on their defense and letting, you know, Alex Smith manage the game as best as possible. Now the roles have been kind of reversed with all the new weapons, Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill. You know, like his touchdown against Dallas, I have no idea how that happened at the end of the half. That was like some Dante Hall-esque stuff there.
But,
and then, so the Chiefs should, they should be focusing on fixing their defense, and I don't think there should be any cause for concern, because at the end of the day, they will win that division and they'll probably have a top three seed in the AFC.
Yeah, because like you said, it's really just three teams in the AFC. I don't think it's a huge cause for concern, but you look at their defense. They lost Eric Berry. That's one thing. But when you look at their front seven, they are really bad against the run as of recently. They're kind of getting gashed up the middle. Now, they still get some pass rush with Justin Houston. Of course, Marcus Peters is one of the league's, if not maybe the league's best corner. But after that, you know, their defense is not as great as it once was. You know, Tom Bailey's not playing. Like we said, Berry's gone. The front seven's not what it used to be. Dontari Poe is not there anymore. So it's a little cause for concern, only because of the Patriots and Steelers. But from their overall outlook, I would say no. But the offense also not doing as well. Of course, the Hill play was incredible, but you take that out, and it's 28-10, Dallas. So going on the other side with the NFC is crazy. The AFC has only 3 6-win teams, and really three teams, like we said, Steelers, Patriots, Chiefs, that have any type of a shot to go to the Super Bowl. The NFC looks to be 6-8 teams that might have a shot. Give me your top three teams in the NFC in order right now.
This is tough. We were also talking about a little bit before the actual podcast. This is tough. Obviously, I think the Eagles, you have to put them at one after what they've done through nine games this year. Wentz has looked so, so much improved since his rookie year. Now with that, you know, double backfield 10 of Ajayi and Blunt, which is absolutely run defense into the ground. They also have a nice complimentary back in Chris Clement, you know, can catch passes and everything like that. They have a good receiving core. Alshon Jeffrey, Aguilar is finally proving himself. Zach Ertz, top five tight end in football for me. So the Eagles are the most complete team in the NFC right now. I think there's no way you can't say that. The other two teams are more of a tough choice. I'm actually going to go number two team are the Saints, running a 6-win streak. They have looked very, very impressive. I think I read a stat. They've won every game in this win streak by like 7 or 8 points, something like that. And my last team is actually going to be the Vikings. The Vikings now with Teddy Bridgewater back. They played Bradford and IR. That Bradford trade really not looking very good for them now. But Bridgewater's back. Obviously, he has a very good rapport with Stephon Diggs, who has been injured as well. Now they're 6-2. They've ridden their defense. Now they're getting the quarterback they drafted to be their franchise QB. If he comes back and performs how they think he can perform, then I look at the Vikings as your third best team in the NFC and possibly a dark horse team to get to the Super Bowl.
All right. So, yeah, you have those some interesting picks. And those are also the three picks in a row in terms of seeding right now. Of course, that'll change a million times with the exception of maybe the Eagles, who are a game and a half on everyone else. But I'm going to go the Eagles at one, of course. Like you said, they add in a whole bunch of weapons. Last year, Carson Wentz may do with a great first stretch of the season before things fell apart because he couldn't throw downfield. He had nobody. Now they add Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith. Opens up things for Aguilar as a third slot underneath option with his speed. That's worked out. They add Jay Ajayi, like you said. Not only do they have now Ajayi and Blunt, but they have Clement and Smallwood and these passing backs. The tackle situation now, Lane Johnson, he's great, but Peters is out. If Peters is healthy, they have one of the most complete offenses I've ever seen in my life. It's just in all facets of the game. Of course, Wentz can run a little bit too. So Eagles are one. But here's where I go differently. Now, Saints, 6 straight wins. I like them. Their defense has been good, not great. We'll see if that holds up. The Vikings have the formula. Now, Dalvin Cook's out, so that's hurting their running game. He's out for the year. But they have the D, the defense, and we'll see what will happen with Bridgewater. Don't have the Saints and Vikings, though. I have my two dark horse teams, which are also the two wild card teams at the moment. I'd love to put Seattle in there. The O-line's not – it just can't hold up. So I have Dallas and then Carolina. Now, this is, of course, Dallas with Zeke, and they have yet to face Philadelphia, so they got to face them twice down the stretch. That might not be enough for them to catch them in terms of the NFC East title, but we'll see how they hold up against Philly, because I do think Dallas definitely makes the playoffs as a wild card team if Ezekiel Elliott stays on the field. Now, that's went back and forth a couple times. Carolina, they host Miami this week. We're not really going to talk about that game. I think they're going to win. I don't know about you. It's a Monday nighter, and in that case, they're going to be one of the ugliest 7-3 teams I've ever seen. But we know Cam can improve. I think he will. And Greg Olsen comes back in what looks to be 2 to 3 weeks. So I have Dallas and Carolina. Do you have those two teams at least making the postseason?
I do. I think Dallas and Seattle really are the two of the three teams I would suspect to try to contend for a wild card spot. Obviously, the other one right now being the Panthers, just based on the divisions, obviously. The Saints and Rams would probably still contend for a wild card if one of them falls in the division because of their record right now. I want to mention the Rams, though, because I've been a huge believer of the Rams this season. I've said it multiple times. I don't have them in my top three at the moment because if you look at their schedule coming up, it's much more daunting than it is their first eight games. So I actually have if I had to pick a top five, I'd actually put the Panthers, even though they're second in the NFC South, I'd put them ahead of the Rams at the moment. But I think the Rams are still above Seattle for me, and I think the Rams have a better chance than Seattle to make the playoffs. But I do understand how Carolina can be in that conversation, but just Seattle's offensive line, that ugly loss to Washington at home, you know, you don't really expect that even with Russell Wilson, and still the defense, you just don't really expect that, and that's why I'm hesitant to even really start to believe in Seattle. And every time I start thinking, oh, here comes Seattle, they have one of these performances, and it really takes away from what they've done the past couple of weeks. I like the Cowboys. I've said they were a good team. With Zeke or no Zeke, I think the Cowboys will be there when it's all said and done in the postseason.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you say about the Rams, because I didn't mention them, and I'll say this really quick before we head to the three games that we're going to talk about. You're right, their schedule. I mean, they're going at Minnesota versus the Saints, at Arizona and Tennessee, at both of those places. That's not super easy. They're at Seattle. They're facing Philly. They're going to have at least three, if not four more losses. It's going to be tough. They could even fall out of the playoff race to me. Not that they're not a good team. I think they're great for the future. And if they win most of those games, and they repeat a 6-2 record, then God Almighty, I'll have them right there at 1 or 2 in the NFC, but we're going to learn a lot about the Rams. I don't have them up top just yet. I don't think their wins have been impressive just because they've been just murderous wins, but some of those wins in terms of teams, other than the win in Dallas, have not been that great. But now heading into the three games, we'll go back to Dallas. The big game of the week, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman on the call. Dallas at Atlanta, pretty big one, because I think if Atlanta loses this, of course it's not mathematically over, but it would seem like the end for Atlanta, I would think, considering that they're probably going to be fighting for a wild card spot against Dallas. So Dallas and Atlanta, who you got?
I have Dallas, actually. I know it's in Atlanta, but I've said for a while now, I just don't really believe Atlanta. They're not playing as sharp, in my opinion. Matt Ryan's had a big drop-off from his MVP season. I'm picking Dallas. I think, obviously, Atlanta keeps it competitive. They're still a decent team. It's not like they're one of the Browns or the Buccaneers, or, you know, the 49ers, the NFL. It's not that, but they're just experiencing, you know, Super Bowl hangover. Teams have found them out. Julio's, you know, has a little kind of injury stretch. He's not playing 100%, maybe not, and then dropped that easy touchdown against Carolina, my God. But and that was a critical point in their season as well. Down 10 on fourth down, and he drops that wide-open touchdown in the end zone. If he catches that, and obviously they scored another one, looking at the Falcons being 5-3, and now this is even much more of a game. Much more of a huge game than it already is. But I think if Atlanta does end up dropping this at home, I think they're done. I think Dallas would really spur Dallas on. They'll be 6-3. And, you know, depending on what the Eagles do, and obviously you mentioned the Cowboys have to play them twice, the Cowboys could still easily win the NFC East when it's all said and done. They can still easily be in contention for an NFC East title. So I think it means a lot to eat both teams, but I'm going with Dallas.
Yeah, and I'm going Dallas as well. It's you know, it's a tough break for Atlanta, and, you know, quite honestly, I'm tired of picking them and them losing, so I am going Dallas on the road if Zeke plays. Now, I think there's another decision coming on his case tomorrow. We'll see about that. If Zeke doesn't play, I'm probably going to go Atlanta. I think he means that much to him, to the Cowboys, you know, probably the second most important player after Dak Prescott, who is a good quarterback, so that kind of explains that. quickly for these two games before we head into New England at Denver, even though that's lacking luster at this point. New Orleans at Buffalo and Minnesota at Washington. Both are pretty big in terms of the playoff push here in the second half of the season. What do you got in those two?
Saints-Bills. I'm picking the Saints because I'm such a big believer in them. But I've said this probably about three or four times now on this podcast. This is a game that if the Bills want to be in the playoffs or around playoff contention or AFC East contention, this is a game where they have to win. They have to prove to the league and to themselves they can compete with one of the league's best teams, or at least one of the league's best teams the past six games in the Saints after their dreadful 0-2 start. But if I am picking the New Orleans on the road again, it's been a theme, picking a lot of teams on the road. I think the Bills, again, good at home. Tyrod Taylor is one of my personal favorite players to watch in the league as well. And obviously, LeSean McCoy is still a Pro Bowl caliber running back, in my opinion. Defense is pretty much like a no-name defense before the season, and now that they're balling out and making plays, they had a bad loss, obviously, a huge game for them to try to rebound. The other game, Vikings Redskins. I'm actually taking the Redskins in this one. I know that, you know, the Vikings could get Bridgewater back. I don't know who they're starting. Bradford and I are. Is it Bridgewater? Is it Keenum? We'll see. The Redskins coming off, obviously, that big win at Seattle, really keeping them in playoff contention, really, because if they lose that, they're 3-5, and everybody's writing them off. If they can win this game, they'll be 5-4. And now, all of a sudden, if you go on to that Dallas-Atlanta game, if Atlanta beats Dallas, would we be hesitant to put Washington over Dallas, especially if Zeke gets suspended again? So that's my two cents on those games, taking Washington and New Orleans.
Okay, and you cut out a little bit there, but we got – we got the brunt of it, and those are good picks. I like we talked about before the pod, you know, in our pre-pod stuff. I'm going Washington as well, but it'll be interesting to see what Minnesota does with Bridgewater down the stretch. And I'm also going New Orleans in Buffalo. I don't trust the Bills. That loss in New York to the Jets, albeit Thursday Night Football, was pretty bad, I think. I think Buffalo still might make the postseason because the AFC is just a wasteland. But I'm going with the Saints for their seventh straight win. I'm going to trust Breeze and Sean Payton. The Saints have been a little better on the road this year because they are usually, let's face it, trash on the road. They're pretty good on the road this year. So we got those three games out of the way. The last one, Pats at Broncos, looked great during the preseason, just like it looked great midway through the season last year. And the game kind of started getting not as hyped up as soon as Denver started losing last year. Denver's on a losing tear right now. But at least it's the revenge game with Brock Osweiler. What do you expect, New England at Denver?
Yeah, obviously this is a tough place that we've always went into Denver. It's been tough. It was Brady's first playoff loss. Has never played well there, yeah, usually. So I look at this game, and I think it's going to obviously be more defensive. Obviously, Denver's defense at home generally sets the tempo and sets the pace for the game. Obviously, they have no idea what's going on at quarterback. Osweiler's going to start, but again, Brock Osweiler, you know, he's just simply not good. Trevor Siemian not cutting it. And how bad must Paxton Lynch be not to be able to get on the field at the moment?
Right.
But, obviously, looking at the game, I think it was 2 years ago now, that snow game, the Harper's Muff game. It was a terrible game to watch because I think we were undefeated at that point, weren't we?
The Pats were 10-0, yep, and they lost. 21-7 lead. I mean, that was just awful.
The first play of the fourth quarter was that, like, 70-yard wheel route from Brady to Bolden. Brandon Bolden, of all people, took to the house, and then we ended up losing that game in overtime. I mean, obviously, the Patriots, there's some new players, but the ones who were there in that game will remember that, and they definitely do not want to lose a game like that in Denver. They, you know, the year before, after they went in and only held them to 3 points, so obviously that's another win, but they're definitely going to be thinking about it now with Osweiler back at quarterback. They'll start to remember it, some of the more veteran players. I hope Brady has a better game than he usually does. Denver's always a tough place to play with the altitude, the fans, and obviously now with this vaunted defense they've had the past few years. But I think the Patriots do win this in the end. I think the spread right now is about like 7.5 something, so I'm actually tempted to do Denver there. I think it's going to be a closer game than what people would expect. I know they just got blown out by Philly, but on the road against a very good offense, and Osweiler making turnover after turnover does not really translate into this kind of game. They'll be at home. They'll probably keep the ball out of his hand more. They'll try to utilize the run game more. But the Patriots defense has really stepped up ever since everybody's been crucifying them. So if we get another good defensive performance, it should be a pretty comfortable win, honestly, even though that Denver, you know, hasn't been looking that great.
Yeah, I agree. Well, in terms of comfortable, I don't think it's going to be a nail biter, but I do think New England wins by 7 to 10 points. Certainly, it's not going to be a blowout. Denver's definitely a better team at home. They're a great team at home. It's one of the toughest places to play. Not even, you know, mentioning the altitude. It's just a raucous fan base. And specifically the Patriots have had a lot of problems in Denver. I do have them winning. I would be shocked if they did what Philly did to them and killed them, but I would also be shocked if they lost. So like you said, the spread is probably where it needs to be, somewhere around anywhere maybe 7 to 10 points, maybe a little less. I think it's going to be close. I have New England winning. That wraps it up for the games this week. I know you got to get out of here in a couple minutes, but really quick, you're getting down here. It's the home stretch for Cumberland Soccer. You're in the conference playoffs. Give us some little tidbits about what's going on right now.
Yeah, so tomorrow at noon, you know, our biggest game of the season, conference semifinal. You know, we won the quarterfinal handily, 3-0 last week, and we're playing, you know, this team is ranked number 18. We've been number 22 now in the country for the last 3 weeks, so we have to win this game or our season is done. If we win the game, we play the final, which is the next day against more than likely would be Lindsey Wilson, a team that beat us in the regular season. The team we're playing tomorrow, we drew 1-1 after we were up 1-0, but then we had a player sent off, so we were kind of under pressure the rest of the game.
Okay.
But we feel very confident to get a result. We were playing very well before the red card in the regular season game. And if we win this game, and lose the final, we still have a chance of getting that large bid. I was talking to you before. I'm leaning no, but this win could vault us up in the RPI after it's revealed. Obviously, the easiest route to get to the national tournament is to just win Thursday and win Friday, and we don't have to worry about it. But we'll have to see other conference results because, obviously, other conferences around the nation are playing their games.
Yep.
So we'll keep an eye on those results, especially if we win Thursday and, you know, unfortunately lose Friday. I hope we don't. Hope we win both, obviously. It's going to be very tough, though, to play two very good teams back-to-back days if that's the case. But right now, we're only focused right now on Thursday. We're not trying to look ahead to anything. We know what we have to do. We know how they play. We know them. They know us. So it's really going to be a physical battle, probably a lot of house out of cards, and really just what team's going to want it more. Could come down to penalties. My sophomore year, 2 years ago, we actually beat them on penalty. Conference final, and so we know them very well.
All right. Well, yeah, and like we said, you know, the easiest route is just to win the conference tournament, just like, you know, it happens, you see, with the conference tournaments and college hoops. You know, you win and you're in. So we're wishing the best for you, and obviously those are some huge games on the horizon, you know, hopefully throughout the rest of this weekend. But we will see you guys next week, hopefully, depending on the power situation, which it seems like the power will stay intact. But I heard there was snow in Massachusetts. We'll see what happens. But we will catch you guys next week.